The Gary Knoll Show, daily at noon on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. Broadcasting live from our studio in New York City and video streaming live from ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com or GaryKnoll.com. Today, I am not going to have a guest on. No in-depth original investigative report because we have done four straight days this week on a very important series. I'm giving a break today. We'll continue next week with one more program. That program will deal specifically with human guinea pigs, how an enormous number of Americans have been put in harm's way intentionally by our government and its scientists, major universities, in order just to see what are the effects of radiation upon human health. I will go into that using Freedom of Information Act documents next week. Today, however, the latest on radiation protection from spirulina and chlorella from Ethan Huff of Natural News. From our environmental section, decline of honeybees now a global phenomenon, what that means. Also, feedlot meat has spurred a soy boom that has devastating environmental and human cost, from Jill Richardson from Alternet. And our issue of the day, which I'll be doing in about 15 or 20 minutes, and I will like your input on this, is Stop Bombing Libya, a commentary from Marjorie Cohen from Common Dreams. And then I'll follow that. Those are both short. And then Robert Scheer, Be Consistent, Invade Saudi Arabia, from Truthdig. Two ways of looking at what we're doing from different perspectives. And last evening I had a chance to speak with some attorneys at the ACLU meeting discussing a new book that's coming out on DNA mapping. And Barry Scheck and probably about 200 people were there to celebrate the publication of the book over at the Museum of Natural History, and I dropped in there for about an hour just to get up to date. And a lot of them were talking about why aren't people in the media talking about how we're really into regime change. That's all this is about, not the we don't want another major crisis, a humanitarian crisis of seeing innocent people slaughtered. Okay. Let's just see if that really plays out. We'll talk about that. Let's begin. I'll be quoting this verbatim. I thought this was interesting. It says, this is from Ethan Huff. It says, protecting yourself in the event of a serious radiation event involves much more than simply loading up on potassium iodide and various other iodine supplements. While high levels of iodine do protect the thyroid and glandular system from radiation poisoning, they do not necessarily protect the rest of your body from the devastating and deadly effects of nuclear radiation. However, two amazing superfoods, spirulina and chlorella, offer substantial protection against harmful radiation. They also help to detoxify the body of harmful radiation after exposure, effectively protecting organs and other areas not protected by iodine. Spirulina, the incredible medicinal food used to treat children of child victims of Chernobyl, the numerous curative and health-promoting properties of spirulina are truly amazing. This blue-green algae superfood is rich in nutrients, all of which makes it highly beneficial as an anti-aging and purification nutrient food. But little known is the incredible radioprotective effect of spirulina. Numerous studies have found that spirulina protects the body against and even heals it from the damaging effects of harmful radiation. A 1989 study put by forth by researchers from the Zaki Agriculture and Technology College in China, found in tests that spirulina significantly reduces the gamma radiation-induced micronucleus frequencies in the bone marrow of affected mice. Bone marrow, of course, is responsible for producing new blood cells, maintaining the lymphatic system. A 1993 report published by the Research Institute of Radiation Medicine in Belarus confirmed previous research conducted in 1990-91, which found that spirulina effectively decreases the radioactive load received by the body when consuming radiation-contaminated food. After just 20 days, children fed 5 grams, that's about a third of an ounce, actually less, about a fifth of an ounce, of spirulina every day, experienced an average of 50% reduction in urine radioactive levels. In a study released by the Mechnikov Odessa State University in the Ukraine in 2000, spirulina proved effective at increasing phosphate, pyruvate, and antioxidant levels in rats with lesions caused by 5 gray units of high-energy radiation. Full body exposure to 5 GY or more typically leads to death within 14 days, but spirulina helped to prevent this. A 2001 study conducted by researchers from the Medical and Pharmaceutical Academy of Yangzhou University in China found that spirulina extracts effectively protected against both the damage caused by chemotherapy drugs and the damaging effects of gamma radiation exposure. Those negatively affected by high levels of radiation after working on cleanup efforts following the 1986 Chernobyl disaster experience improvements in the autoregulatory functioning of their bodily organs and other systems, as well as long-term remissions from overall radiation damage after being treated with a regimen that included spirulina. Spirulina works so well at mitigating the damaging effects of radiation that it was actually awarded a Russian patent in 1995 for improving the immunity of children affected by radiation from the Chernobyl disaster. Many exposed children became stricken with chronic radiation sickness and elevated immunoglobulin levels, and they also tested positive for high allergy sensitivity. But upon consuming roughly 5 grams of spirulina a day for 45 days, the children's IgE levels and allergic sensitivity were restored back to normal. Conclusively, spirulina offers remarkable radioprotective benefits in addition to its many other health-promoting benefits. Regular consumption of spirulina not only helps to boost immune function and normalize the systems in the body that regulate and maintain overall health, but the superfood also offers a surefire way to mitigate the damaging effects of harmful radiation. Now, chlorella, much like spirulina, is loaded with an astounding array of nutrients that help detoxify the body of heavy metals and other contaminants. A single-cell algae also helps prevent and repair DNA damage, balance the body's pH levels, fights inflammation, improves digestive health, and boosts immune function. And as far as harmful radiation is concerned, chlorella is a powerful weapon to both prevent radioactive damage and to heal it once it has occurred. A 1989 study put forth by Czechoslovakia Academy of Sciences demonstrated that chlorella effectively increases production of bone marrow and spleen stem cells, and in tests, chlorella greatly helped improve survival rates among mice irradiated with a lethal dose of radioactive gamma rays. In 1993, researchers from Nehru University in India also found that chlorella is effective at protecting against and mitigating the damage caused by both acute and chronic radiation damage. A 1995 study published in the Indian Journal of Experimental Biology found that when administered before or upon exposure to sublethal radioactive gamma rays, chlorella helps to boost levels of colony-forming spleen cells. Such cells exist within the bone marrow and are essential for the production of vital blood elements and immune factors. Ultimately, the incredible detoxifying power of chlorella is not limited to toxins like mercury, aluminum, and fluoride. Just like it does to toxic heavy metals, chlorella binds to radioactive particles and literally flushes them out of the body. Both spirulina and chlorella are absolutely essential weapons in any natural radioprotective arsenal. Together, these two powerful sea-based nutrients can help rid the body of radiation. And that's from him. Just a few thoughts. We have to keep in perspective that anyone writing on any subject may be biased. We also do not know in the total context of how protective they are. I don't want people thinking that's all they need to protect themselves, because it doesn't tell us at what point a person is protected. So I would simply use that as a stimulator for more research and more thought on the subject. But not, I repeat, not as a cure-all. Next, apples could hold the key for increasing lifespan. This was a very interesting study from the Journal of Agriculture and Food Chemistry. And here's what it says. Apples are delicious and healthy. And as we've previously reported on this program, there is a growing body of evidence showing apples fight cancer. In fact, half a dozen studies published by Dr. Liu and associates, he's a professor of food science and a member of Cornell University's Institute for Comparative and Environmental Toxicology, have found eating apples is an especially powerful way to prevent breast cancer. Now there's breaking research that shows consuming apples regularly may contribute to a longer lifespan. And it's just been published by the American Chemical Society's Journal of Agriculture and Food Chemistry. The team of scientists, led by Dr. Chen of the Food Nutrition Science Program at Chinese University of Hong Kong, have reported the first evidence that healthy antioxidant substances in apples extends the average lifespan of test animals by 10%. And that's good news. Quote, moreover, the apple polyphenols actually reverse the level of a host of biochemical substances found in older fruit flies that are known to be markers of age-related deterioration and approaching death. More good news about apples and other fruit. A new study from Harvard School of Public Health researchers concludes men and women who regularly eat berries have a lower risk of developing Parkinson's disease, and the men can lower the risk of Parkinson's even more by regularly eating apples, as well as oranges and other fruits rich in phytochemicals known as flavonoids. The study is slated to be presented at the American Academy of Neurology's annual meeting coming up next month. So, eating apples, having berries, can protect you and have you live a longer life. Now, why is chocolate good for the heart? And the scientific evidence to back it up. Chocolate is good for you, I believe, if it's raw, if it's organic, and if it doesn't have adulteration of chemicals, refined sugars, and dairy. According to an article in the Journal of Agriculture and Food Chemistry, now they're looking at how does it actually help the heart. And the scientific basis for healthy chocolate consumption is more plentiful than most people realize. For example, here's what we now can prove, beyond any doubt, that healthy chocolate inhibits the oxidation of LDL cholesterol. It improves endothelial functioning. It inhibits platelet aggregation that can help prevent a stroke. It reduces the bad LDL that can prevent high levels of heart disease. It increases the good HDL. It increases insulin sensitivity. That's good news for people who are overweight or diabetic. It reduces inflammation proteins, and it lowers blood pressure. These multiple benefits are likely mediated by the polyphenol content in cocoa, most significantly in the flavan-3-oles, particularly the epicatechins and the catechins, and their proanthocyanidins. Polyphenols, like catechins and proanthocyanidins, you can also find in green tea, blueberries, and grapes. And these polyphenols are very important for your heart. So they can help your heart, they can help prevent cancer. So now mainstream science, in studying these, are finding out that it does a lot of good. Now, a lot of people are now finally getting around to doing something that we've been suggesting for decades. Buy organic fruits or go to an orchard and harvest your fruits in season. Take them back, you wash them, cut them in half, take out the core, and then dry them. And there are food dryers now that will dry it at 120 degrees or below, so it's still a raw food. It simply wicks out slowly over about a 12 to 14 hour period all the water, so you're ending up with a true dried fruit. Now, I dry every kind of fruit. Mulberries right now are in season, so drying mulberries and loquats. And most fruits can be dried. And most vegetables dried. And so you've got something that's loaded with nutrition that will last for months. And what I do when I dry my fruits, I then put them into a special type of plastic bag that's biodegradable. You zip it, and I put it in the freezer. It'll last forever. And that way, whenever you want a dried fruit, you have it. And it's a whole lot less expensive drying your own fruit. They can go up to $20 a pound, depending upon, like a gooseberry, is $20 a pound when you do it yourself. Here's the caveat. And this is from a new article talking about what you shouldn't do. I'll quote this from Fleur Hupson from Natural News. Quote, most people ingest large quantities of sulfur dioxide on a daily basis without even being aware of it. This is because the preservative is added to dried fruit, wine, fruit juices, jams, instant coffee, and other products. In addition, hydrogenated fats are often added to dried fruit, which contributes to cardiovascular disease and obesity. Fruits can easily be dried at home as a less expensive and healthier option to buying store-bought dried fruit. Sulfur dioxide is a preservative that is used to make dried fruits look better by preventing fruits from going brown. It helps to keep fruit moist and extends their shelf life. However, sulfur dioxide has been linked to asthma attacks, stomach problems, and lower respiratory tract symptoms. Due to its composition, sulfur dioxide is a major air pollutant and has significant negative impact on human health and breathing. Dried tree fruits such as peaches, apricots, apples, pears are usually heavily sulfided. If dried fruits are store-bought from organic stores, they are generally expensive. Yet sun-dried fruits such as banana and mango slices, apples, coconut, tomato, peaches, pears, and pineapples are so easy to make at home. So that's the key. Now, how do you know if something's sulfur? Just look at it. If you see apricots that are orange, if you see any fruit that looks like its natural color, it's been sulfured. And most of, like, a pineapple, mango, they're going to be brown. Here's what I do. About 2 hours before the drying process is finished, I spray lemon juice on the fruit. Lemon juice not only acts as a natural preservative, but also helps stop or slow down or limit discoloration. So that's something to do. I'm Gary Noll, back in a moment. Please stay with us.
Oh, she didn't bat an eye as I packed my bags to leave. I thought she would start to cry. I sit around my room.
A little extra on health and nutrition. This is an interesting article, and it's from the Center for Disease Control and the British medical journal The Lancet. I'll quote this from Christine Wortman. Quote, over 5 million children aged 4 to 17 have been diagnosed with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, ADHD, in the United States, and more than 3 million of those children take medication for their symptoms. That's according to the CDC. But a new study reported in The Lancet last month found that with a restricted diet alone, many children have experienced a significant reduction in symptoms. The study's lead author, Dr. Pessler, of the ADHD Research Center in the Netherlands, said that, quote, teachers thought it was so strange that the diet would change the behavior of the child as thoroughly as they saw it. It was a miracle, the teacher said. Okay? 2 years ago, I took a group of parents and children diagnosed with ADD, and we did more than just a restricted diet. we did a radicalization of the diet. No animal proteins, no dairy, no wheat, no sugar, no artificial sweetener, no soft drinks, no caffeine. Instead, organic juices and then proper supplementation, a healthy diet, lots of nuts and seeds, starting the day with a protein shake that was loaded with coconut oil, flaxseed oil, high-quality fiber, fruits, protein, and probiotics. Then they were supplemented with a methylated B12 and a methylated folic acid. They also had chelation therapy. About 90% of children made radical improvements. Then, approximately 4.5 months ago, a charter school in Newark, where I believe 100% of the students are low income, below the poverty level, almost all African American or Latino, entered for the first time with the faculty and the parents and students a protocol to radically change their lifestyle and diet. They were given weekly meetings, monthly meetings, support at every level. The conclusion was that the people who followed the protocol had absolutely fantastic results. Blood pressure, cholesterol, asthma, fatigue, overweight, all dropped like a lead balloon. People said it was nothing less than miraculous. For us, we didn't believe it was miraculous. We just thought it was cause and effect, a normal consequence of making healthy choices. So for all of the people in this audience, in particular churches, synagogues, mosques, because the public school system is impossible to work with. It is simply so inept, inefficient, corrupt, conflicts of interest, raging egos, that with the exception of some of the charter schools, it is impossible to do anything constructive for the students, even though we have wonderful teachers. The curriculums are perverse. They're the stupidest curriculums you could ever imagine. So I'm going a different route. I'm not going to bash my head against the wall anymore trying to help the school system, unless you're a private school where you actually can do something, where one individual can actually make a decision that can have enormous positive benefit for everyone else. Otherwise, I wish the entire school system would be radically changed so that the kids actually are not the victims of everyone from the stupid unions to the incompetent teachers. And yet we have competent teachers, but they don't have control. Or parents say, I want my kid to eat whatever they want, I don't care. I want where a congregation that actually has a head person who can make a decision, encourage the congregation, at least those who choose to participate, where we can actually measure a beginning, a middle, and end, where people will have their blood pressure, their blood sugar, their weight, the impedance, and they'll all be given ongoing classes and lectures, and then get the feedback. I believe that you will see the children of the congregation lose weight, go from adult diabetic to non-diabetic, go from massive obesity to normal weight, high blood pressure, cholesterol back to normal, improvement in mood, focus, concentration, sleep habits, digestion, and behavior in the adults and the seniors and the children. I believe that people suffering from arthritis, fibromyalgia, and pain will have it diminished or gone. That's what I'd like to see. You see, I don't believe that we should measure anything by our efforts. We should be measured by our results. Our society has adapted to this notion that nothing's ever going to work because you can't get three people together to ever agree upon how something should be done. I disagree with that. The charter school in Newark showed what can be done. But you must have one dynamic person. I never like to be politically correct because it just smacks down truth. I believe in telling the truth, and if people don't like it, they can stuff it. That's how much I align myself with political correctness. Man, do I like things that can get done properly because you have some dynamic energy. In this world, nothing will ever get done anywhere except massive anarchy and chaos or indifference in a race to the bottom unless you have someone who has the integrity, the care for their congregation to say, this is what we're going to do. I did this years ago with a morbidly obese rabbi. This man was as close to death as you could get. And finally, he turned it around, as did his congregation. I was not able to film that. Today, I will film it. Because had I had the results of this rabbi and his congregation, whoa, would that be an incentive. I would have sent that program to every synagogue, every member of the Jewish community we could get that is a part of a group to show, want to save your lives, want to improve your lives. What's someone going to say? No? No, we want people to have more death and disease. And of course, people want people to live a longer life. But it's not going to happen if we do it in the foolish way and politically correct way. We got to go to the person who can say, yes, in my world, everything works for one reason, because I'm the guy who says, yes, 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 yes. How can we make life here better? You go to any bureaucracy, any public school, and it's no, no, no. What do you want? What do you want? No, no, no. What do you want? What do you want? God, can't we get over this whole nonsense of talking with people who have no intention of ever doing anything right? They have no intention. They'll go out of their way to undermine you. Talk with any bureaucracy, any governmental agency. These creeps are really disgusting. And watch the documentary I'm planning on doing to show you, for all of you who think your government agency, state, federal level are doing a good job and let's expand them, no, they're not. They're the problem, not government. Government's not the problem. Turning over to the government what we could be doing for ourselves, or demanding that the government agencies that exist do what they're supposed to do to really meet the needs of the people. Now, does that offend someone? Does that run up your leg like a cold shiver, that the government agencies and the people you're paying should actually do something that's constructive for the constituents? Or do we want to continue what we've had in the past, people fearing their government because of the government's capacity to make your life a living hell, to treat you like you're a slave? Well, those days are going to be challenged in the future, thank goodness. But right now, let's just challenge something we can all agree upon. People deserve to live a healthier, longer life. How can we do that? Change. Real change. Not superficial change. Who's going to cause the change? The only way you're ever going to get change for anything in life is to have someone who has the courage to stand up and say, enough crap, this is what we're going to do. You're either in it or you're not. If you don't want to be healthy, fine. But for those who want to be healthy, we're going to provide you with a form. People have a freedom of choice. People have a freedom to say yes or no. Even my own family, you have no idea how frustrating it's been in my life to not have a single member of my family ever take my advice. Ever. Not once. I don't care what it was. They wouldn't read the books. They wouldn't read the articles. They wouldn't take supplements. They wouldn't change the diet. I'd go back home to West Virginia. They'd be sitting there eating pork chops with so much fat, you could see their veins and their neck pulsing, you know, and then they'd all go to sleep right after. You could walk in and walk out with all the furniture in my house and nobody would know, because they'd all be asleep about 10 minutes after a meal with about 17 million calories in it. And then they'd wonder why they had to sit on a toilet for about 3.5 days. And that wasn't pleasant growing up in an environment like that. Never once maybe suggesting I knew what I was talking about. Oh, Gary, the rabbit food guy. Gary, eating any more grass? That's that. But I tell you, that's what I had to deal with all of them. I still loved them. They were nice people, but just so impossible. I call it the West Virginia shuffle. They'll sit right there and look at you, smoke a cigarette, drink coffee, eat crap, and say, I'm really interested in health. No, they weren't. So for the priests, the imams, the rabbis, you have the authority to say yes, not your congregation. You do. The congregation either can go along with it or not. If you can get enough of your congregation to go along, then we'll save their lives. We'll change their lives. The people that are complaining now about can't afford their medicines, the kids are complaining about they can't even focus or on drugs, the people that are sitting in your congregation suffering or dying prematurely, we can change all that. I can do this if you work with me. I'm donating my time free as a public service. Give a call. Now, I'm going to give you Jason's number, and Jason will take your calls if you want to get on board. I'm going to only be able to do this in the next 4 weeks, because then I got to go out and film this 12 tipping points, so I'm going to be out of the city for a while. So call 646-926-5428. 646-926-5428. After all, what is the number one expense in America? Dwarfing our housing, food, military industrial complexes, as obscene as that amount is, healthcare. Because we're not spending 5 cents a year on preventing disease in the United States. And we're not going to. You're not going to see any ad ever on television, with the exception of cigarette smoking, showing you why you shouldn't be eating the fast food. You're going to see all the ads to eat fast foods. So that's why it's important that we not wait for some authority figure that's been co-opted, corrupted, and is selling you things that create disease and death. We got to be proactive in a positive way and do the right thing. And we have all the ways we can do it. We've done it. We can do it now. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Knoll. Don't forget, Sunday night, 8 to 9 p.m., I'll be here taking calls and talking on the issues that you find important in your life. Now, I'm going to go to our issues and share two brief commentaries from two individuals, and then I would like you to call in and share your points of view. And then we're going to be speaking with Dr. Howard Robbins, who just called in. I always ask him, when you get something that's really unique, when people have been helped in a way that otherwise wouldn't be helped, I care about results. Tell us who it is. Let us speak with the person directly and see what improvement they've made. That's always good because it focuses upon the positive. Let's face it, the only reason you're going to be happy, the only way you're going to share love, the only way you're going to care about yourself and other people, the only way the world's going to get improved, the only way we're going to deal with our nuclear insanity and our corporatization and our free market system and globalization, the only way we're going to have any alternative voices if we stay positive and come up with positive solutions. That's what we're about. Now, a little special for you. We haven't had one all this week. And then over to our issues. And they just gave me this special, and this is a phenomenal special. This is really very neat. It's two different specials in one. Our new and improved green stuff and new and improved greens and grains, both which should be taken together because they're the full spectrum of green products in high dosages with big ORAC and lots of good ingredients, are both get them together. You can only get them together. So these are the big 500 gram. If you're looking, I'm holding them both up now. Now here's what you're getting. Let me read the ingredients. Now mind you, I could have put all this along with berry blast and red stuff all in one product, as some people have tried to do out there, and you get infinitesimal tiny little milligrams, not enough to keep a cockroach alive. But to do it ethically and to do it honestly, you have to give people the amount of a nutrient that can actually make a difference in their bodies. Hence, instead of putting it all in one product, I decided to put it in four different products. That's why I take all four each day. So let's just give you the new and improved green stuff, by the way, that has that wonderful pineapple cherry flavor and taste. So anybody who doesn't like green vegetables will still love this. Here are the ingredients. First, you're getting apple pectin, 2,400 milligrams. Apple? Where have we heard how good that is? Then we're getting that organic barley grass, which is one of the most powerful things you can take in of all the phytonutrients. And you can look up on Google and look at the phytonutrients, phytochemistry, the polyphenol levels of each one of these, and you'll see how many studies exist that support why they're important. Then we're giving you spinach and chlorella, 850 milligrams of chlorella, and organic spirulina, 835 milligrams, and celery, cauliflower, cabbage, broccoli, oat beta-glucan, that's a very important thing, kale, asparagus, parsley, radish, broccoli sprouts, onions, collard greens, and arugula. So those are all superstars, and they're all in green stuff. Then in greens and grains, oh, by the way, and you're getting 10,000 protective antioxidant ORAC in there. Then in greens and grains, you're getting organic flaxseed powder, then oat grass, alfalfa, pumpkin, green kamut, sprouted quinoa. When you hear of sprouted quinoa and sprouted kamut and sprouted amaranth, that means you're not getting gluten. These are gluten-free because they're sprouted. Then the positive bacteria, yucca, fennel, ginseng, chia, bromelain, which is a pineapple enzyme, and five types of sea vegetables. You heard me right, five different types of sea vegetables, a carotenoid complex, ginger root, and 8 billion positive probiotics, dairy-free, of different types. I have a blend of at least five different types of probiotics representing 8 billion good bacteria altogether. So add them all together. You're getting 48 phytonutrients from vegetables, and including the organic spirulina and chlorella and all these and sprouted grains and sea vegetables and probiotics and antioxidants. This is just the superstar superstar. I can't imagine anyone with what's going on in the world today of not flooding their body on a daily basis with something that has only positive effects, is phenomenally important for the cells. And you're getting up for this. Here's what they've said. You're going to save, you ready for this, for the next 24 hours, $70. Now, with these have not been like this before. You're getting both jars together for $99. Plus your shipping and handling. Call, and I've got exactly 400 bottles, and that's it. And by the way, we've been out a lot of this the last month because a lot of it went to some of the non-commercial stations, and we make all this in small, tiny little batches, so it's always kept fresh. It has to be assayed. I have to see the assay. We have to go through a whole process of my rigid standards, and that's why I don't have a lot in inventory. Call 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. You're going to get green stuff and greens and grains, both 500-gram jars with 48 vegetables in it at the amounts that I believe are necessary, probiotics, antioxidant, ORAC, everything good. And that is what I'd want my body every single day, and that goes in my body every single day, along with berry blast and red stuff. Now to our theme, And the first one is from Marjorie Cohen from Common Dreams. And just to give you background, Marjorie is a professor at Thomas Jefferson School of Law, a past president of the National Lawyers Guild, deputy secretary general of external communication at the International Association of Democratic Lawyers, and U.S. representative to the Executive Committee of the American Association of Jurists. She's also the author of Cowboy Republic, Six Ways the Bush Gang Has Defied the Law, and Rules of Disengagement, The Politics and Honor of Military Dissent. Here's what she says. This is not long, but I think it's important we hear her perspective because we have not heard this from the left or right, with a few exceptions. The United States, France, and Britain have been bombing Libya with cruise missiles, B-52 self-bombers, F-16 and F-15 fighter jets, and Harrier attack jets. There's no reliable estimate of the number of civilians killed. U.S. has taken the lead in the punishing bombing campaign to carry out United Nations Security Council Resolution 1973. The resolution authorizes U.N. member states, quote, to take all necessary measures to protect civilians and civilian population areas under threat of attack in the Libyan Arab areas, including Benghazi, while excluding a foreign occupation force of any form on any part of Libyan territory, end quote. The military action taken exceeds the bounds of, quote, all necessary measures authorization. All necessary measures should first have been peaceful measures to settle the conflict. But peaceful means were not exhausted before Obama began bombing Libya. a high-level international team consisting of representatives of the 22 Arab Leagues, nations, the Organization of African Unity, and the UN Secretary General should have been dispatched to Tripoli to attempt to negotiate a real ceasefire and set up a mechanism for elections and for protecting civilians. There's no doubt that Gaddafi has been brutally repressing Libyans in order to maintain his power. But the purpose of the United Nations is to maintain international peace and security. The growing conflict in Libya is a civil war, which arguably does not constitute a threat to international peace and security. The UN Charter commands that all members settle their international disputes by peaceful means to maintain international peace, security, and justice. Members must also refrain from the threat or use of force against the territorial integrity or political independence of any state or in any manner inconsistent with the purpose of the United Nations. Only when a state acts in self-defense in response to an armed attack by one country against another can it militarily attack another state under the UN Charter. The need for self-defense must be overwhelming, leaving no choice of means and no moment for deliberation. Libya has not attacked another country. The United States, France, and Britain are not acting in self-defense. Humanitarian concerns do not constitute self-defense. The UN Charter does not permit the use of military force for humanitarian interventions, but the UN General Assembly embraced a norm of responsibility to protect in the outcome document of the 2005 World Summit. Paragraph 138 of that document says each individual state has a responsibility to protect its populations from genocide, war games, ethnic cleansing, and crimes against humanity. Paragraph 139 adds that the international community, through the United Nations, has also, quote, the responsibility to use appropriate diplomatic, humanitarian, and other peaceful means in accordance with Chapters 6 and 8 of the Charter to help protect populations from genocide, war crimes, ethnic cleansing, and crimes against humanity. Chapter 6 of the Charter requires parties to a dispute likely to endanger the maintenance of international peace and security, quote, first of all, seek a solution by negotiation, inquiry, mediation, conciliation, arbitration, judicial settlement, resort to regional agencies or arrangements of other peaceful means of their own choice, unquote. Now, it is only when peaceful means have been tried and proven inadequate that the Security Council can authorize action under Chapter 7 of the Charter. That action includes boycotts, embargoes, severance of diplomatic relations, and even blockades or operations by air, sea, and land. Well, that is her thoughts. And let us also ask another question. What happens when all of these forces attack around the areas, supposedly with the idea of stopping Gaddafi, and what happens to those individuals called rebels? How many of those individuals could be Al-Qaeda members? What's going to fill the vacuum? Why did we not encourage the Arab League and 22 nations of the Arab League to come into there and sit down with Gaddafi and negotiate this? At the very least, the Arab League nations could have, with the power it has and the arms that it has and intelligence, it could have gone into the cities that were under siege to have protected the individuals there without the regime change that is occurring now. From Robert Scheer from Common Dreams, quote, be consistent, invade Saudi Arabia, quote, it's the black gold that drives nations mad and inevitably raises the question of whether America and the former European colonial powers give a damn about human rights as the basis for military intervention. If Libya didn't have more oil than any other nation in Africa, would the West be unleashing high-tech military mayhem to contain what is essentially a tribal-based civil war? Once again, an American president summons the passions of a human rights crusade against a reprehensible ruler whose crimes, while considerable, are not significantly different from those of dictators the U.S. routinely protects. It is difficult to escape the conclusion that Gaddafi must now go not because his human rights record is egregious, but rather because his erratic hold on power seems spent. After all, from the London School of Economics to Harvard, influential foreign policy experts were all too happy, until quite recently to accept Libyan payoffs in exchange for a more benign view of Gaddafi's prospects for change under the gentle guidance of what Harvard's Joseph Nye celebrated as soft power. But that revisionist appraisal of Gaddafi suddenly became an embarrassment when this nutty dictator, whom few in the world could ever understand, let alone warm to, was exposed by defections from his own armed forces to be akin to rotten fruit destined to drop. Libya's honeymoon with the West, during which leaders led by Tony Blair and George Bush thought Colonel Gaddafi might finally proved to be a worthy partner more concerned with reliably exporting oil than ineffectively ranting against Western imperialism, has suddenly been abandoned as no longer necessary. As with former U.S. ally Saddam Hussein before him, the Libyan strongman now seemed an awkward relic of a time that has passed by him and easily replaceable. Not so the royal ruler of Saudi Arabia and the surrogates he finances in Yemen and Bahrain. Their suppression of their people still falls within acceptable limits because the vast resource the king manages in the manner that Western leaders have long found agreeable. But this time, in the glaring light of the democratic current sweeping through the Middle East, the contradictions in supporting one set of dictators while toppling others may prove impossible for the U.S. and its allies to effectively manage. The recognition, while demanded throughout the region that even ordinary Middle Easterners have inalienable rights, is a sobering notion that easily co-opted. Why don't those rights to self-determination extend to the Shiites in the richest oil province in Saudi Arabia, or for that matter to Palestinians in the West Bank or Gaza? The fallback position of U.S. policymakers is the war on terror standard under which our dictators are needed to control super fanatic Muslims. That's why the U.S. trained the Republican Guard led by the son of the despised ruler of Yemen as the counterterrorism liaison with Washington. On Tuesday, it was the tanks of the lavishly U.S.-equipped Republican Guard that stood as the final line of support surrounding the presidential palace of the departing Yemen dictator increased in intensity. The U.S. was still following the lead of Saudi Arabia, long a financier of Yemen ruler. The Saudi lead was never clear in the kingdom's support of the royal family in neighboring Bahrain, as Saudi troops were sent in along with forces from the United Arab Emirates to suppress Bahrain's democracy advocates, claiming that freedom would enhance the power of the majority Shiite population. The fraud here is to locate Shiite Iran as the center of terrorism when it was the Sunni monarchies that were most closely identified with the problems that gave rise to Al-Qaeda. Not only did 15 of the 19 hijackers on 9/11 come from Saudi Arabia, but Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates, along with Pakistan, were the only countries that diplomatically recognized the Taliban regime that harbored Al-Qaeda. In Bahrain, the majority Shiite population is dismissed as potentially under the sway of the rulers of Iran without strong evidence to that effect. Once again, it is convenient to ignore the fact that Iran, as was the case with Saddam Hussein's Iraq, had nothing to do with 9/11 attack that launched U.S. war on terror, all of which elevates the question of how long would the U.S. and its allies ignore the elephant in the room posed by an alliance for human rights and anti-terrorism with regimes in the Middle East that stand or die. While the jury is out on whether the West's attack on Libya will prove to be a boom for that nation's population, at the very least, it should expose the deep hypocrisy of continuing to sell huge amounts of arms and others while supporting Saudi Arabia in its continent tyrannies. Unquote. Your thoughts, please. And we will take your calls at 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Your thoughts. I'm not sharing mine. I'd like to hear yours. And while you're thinking about what to say and call in, let's go over and say hello to Dr. Howard Robbins. Hi, Howard. Howard, are you there?
Hi, Gary. How are you?
I'm good, Howard. It sounds like you're screaming from a football field.
Oh.
Pick up the phone, Howard. That's right.
Yeah, no, what happened was it was... never mind.
Okay.
It was on speakerphone.
Now, I don't know who you have on. Who do you have on the line?
Well, what happened was the patient had called in, a patient by the name of Walter with his problem, and he was told that he wasn't going to be on today, so he's not on today. That's what happened.
Okay, tell us what the condition was.
Well, let me tell you what happened to him. Walter is a diabetic, And he's a brittle diabetic with an insulin pump. And the insulin pump went off, and it didn't beep to let him know. So he went into a state where his sugar rose so high, he started hallucinating. And being a runner, in fact, he was a member of our running club once, he went out running barefooted without shoes or socks on.
As a diabetic?
Diabetic.
That's really foolish. All he has to have one little tiny cut, there could be an infection, he would lose his foot and leg to gangrene.
Well, that's what happened. He didn't realize he was doing it. He was hallucinating. By the time he got back in and burning up some of that sugar in his blood running and realized what happened, his feet were a bloody mess. And in fact, when he got into the office, they were gangrenous. Now, he's on one of your protocols, you know, nutritional protocols for life for diabetes, which made a very big difference. And he eats raw foods only and things like that as well. We started him on the intravenous ozone therapy, and we had to inject right into his foot as well, particularly because of the gangrene that already resulted, some dry gangrene. Then along with other foot and leg care that we gave him, natural foot and leg care, it took a few weeks, but we saved his feet. The gangrene is gone.
That's great news.
He didn't lose any part of his feet. And he's blown away once again by what the ozone therapy and natural healing can do.
Well, good for you. I'm glad that you helped save this guy's life. Howard, you know what I want? Come on Sunday night and just talk about foot and leg care. We have problems with people who have fungus nose and hammer toes and fallen arches and varicosities, all kinds of problems. And I haven't done a program on foot and leg care for a long time. Why don't you come on at the top of the hour and we can talk and just take some calls on foot and leg care. I'm sure a lot of people would like to improve the quality of their legs, their calves, their circulation, their feet, and everything else. All right?
That'll be great. So this Sunday night on Progressive Radio Network,
give your phone number, Howard.
Okay. It's 212-581-0101. That's 212-581-0101.
Okay, Howard, see you Sunday evening. Talk about foot and leg care.
And
we'll set aside all
the...
As long as we got people on the call, we'll do it. I'm Gary Noll. I promised you an opportunity to share your points of view, and I don't... my computer's not working in our studio right now, so I'm flying by. Let's just see if we have some people online. Anthony, you're on the line. Your thoughts, please.
Hey, Gary, how you doing?
Doing great.
I was actually really feeling how you were feeling about the things on Libya. You know, I drive a cab in and out of the city all day with different people, and when I tell them that it's very strange how we attack them and don't do the same for other countries in Africa or the way China suppresses their population. Yes, and people don't seem to realize that that's a problem. You know, people just keep living their life like it's okay to do that.
This is a tribal issue, and you have to understand the nature of tribes, nature of power, and supporting the pro-democracy movements, which we should be doing. But I believe it's utter hypocrisy what we've done. Where were we when over 4.5 million people, the largest single genocide since the Second World War, occurred in the Congo, and we couldn't find the strength or character to go in and stop it? Where were we when it came to Biafra? Where were we when it came to many of the other the Sudan and Darfur, where 2 million people have been displaced, where we could have done something? What about China, which is one of the greatest abusers of human rights and civil rights in the world, where they actually have taken prisoner 1 million. Does that qualify for genocide? Falun Gong members put them in military hospitals and are harvesting their organs. And that's completely known by everyone in our State Department and our White House. And yet because they give us money and we buy their products cheaply, we say it's okay. And what about, did we not see Saudi Arabia send a whole division of tanks into Bahrain, and then they started killing the civilians? Did we not see over 55 people killed by snipers supplied by weapons we believe came from the United States because we were supporting the existing dictator in Yemen? Do these movements not count? Do these people not deserve someone to stop the tyranny against them? Or is it, see, if you're going to do something, do it evenly and do it across the board.
Hey, Gary, remember what you were saying about your family not heeding your advice? They were calling you like, the, you know, Rabbit Gary, whatever.
Yeah.
It's pretty much the same thing. Yeah, I do the same thing. I tell my family how, about health and about society and about the way things are. And it's kind of the same thing. You know, they make fun of it. You know, I'm thinking in conspiracy. I'm a caveman. You know,
they think you're a conspiratorialist. Why don't you watch the people like O'Reilly and others bang the drums for war? The neocons like Billy Crystal and these people getting on there and saying we've got to go to war, and yet not asking, have you thought this through? Why are we engaged in a civil war when you have 22 of the region's Arab League members who should be the people to go in, since they are also tribal, they are also in the same region, they also communicate with one another, they're alliances but not all friends, and yet we refuse to do this. And this is about regime change because of oil. This has nothing to do about saving lives. If we want to save lives, then we should have a boycott against China, and we should not do any more business or take any more money. We should not do anything with Saudi Arabia. You want to talk about repressing people and being a terror, then Saudi Arabia goes right up at the top of the list. So I just see this as utter hypocrisy, but I thank you very much for calling in, sharing your point of view. We'll take another call. Let's see who we have on the line. Chris from Queens. Hi, Chris. You're on the air.
Hi, Gary. I just have a quick comment, and I'd like to put out a question.
Yes.
It's just interesting how quickly everybody rushes in to supposedly save lives while they go in to bomb other civilians. I mean, you don't need a Harvard degree to see how absolutely hypocritical this is. So we're going to supposedly to save civilians, and we bomb, and other civilians get killed. But I suppose the civilians on one side are not as important as the other ones, you know. It's just beyond belief. It's Alice in Wonderland on methamphetamines, you know. I just wanted to put out a question there. I'd like to ask President Obama, if I ever had an opportunity, I would ask him. And, you know, I realize that, you know, that he's a puppet to a large degree. So I don't want to put the whole onus on him. But I would love to ask him a question face-to-face and ask him, would you accept the Peace Prize that you received before you actually took office if it were given to you today? And I would love to hear his answer to that. Because, you know, as an American citizen, I'm just tired of hearing this slop that's going around. And it's unfortunate. It just seems like the neocons of the Bush administration are still insidiously at play here. And I think Americans need to mature and grow up a little bit.
That we're incapable of. If you watch this stupid, vulgar, perverse show, The Jersey Idiots, and all these others.
Yeah, it's...
No, let me say something. Don't blame Obama and the neocons. Go back to the Reagan neocons. Go back to the Clinton neocons. Go back then to the Bush neocons, and now you have come up to the Obama neocons. You can't separate them. Their policies are the same. And until such time that we're able to look at how we can deal with problems without first using the military, and what have we gotten? Which wars have we won? How have we become a better nation? How have we liberated people? How have we sponsored pro-democracy movements? Maybe I missed something. Did we support any one of the 22 Arab nations' pro-democracy movements before the Tunisian man set himself on fire? Did we support any of them? No.
It's
not one. Did we support 22 Arab League nations that made up of 18 of those 22 are dictatorships or despotic regimes, and the ones that are supposed to be parliamentarian are our foe? Did we support them? Yes. I think the American public is smarter, or should be smarter, than allowing itself to be propagandized by the Sean Hannitys, the Bill O'Reillys, and the others, people who have this incredible hyper alpha male on steroid need to go to war and intervene for regime change without looking at the consequences. And you are right. We will deny all civilian casualties because, oh, that might make us have to think, whose lives are we saving? And once again, look at the world and whose lives we could have saved had we decided that for humanitarian reasons, not regime change, not because of oil or water or gas, that it was the right thing to do. If we cared about people and human rights, we would be doing no business with China, no business with Saudi Arabia. In fact, we wouldn't be doing business with the 22 Arab League nations and half of those countries in South America and Central America over the last 40 years. If we're nothing, we are pure, oozing hypocrisy.
Gary, can I say just one more quick thing?
Go ahead.
Last Sunday, I don't watch these gas bags on the shows, but I believe it was last Sunday, if I'm not mistaken. The infamous Paul Wolfowitz was back on with Christiane Amanpour, specifically about Libya. I tuned in for 3 minutes, and I didn't want to throw up, so I just changed the channel. So when we're talking about neocons, I agree with you. They're all out in full force again. It was Paul Wolfowitz, this man who went to the World Bank supposedly to stop corruption, and it was the most corrupt of all of them. I couldn't believe he was still on as a legitimate commentator. After, by the way, last comment, that this is what I mean about Americans. At some point, we have to be responsible for the way we perceive things as well. I mean, have people forgotten about the 1 million people who were killed in Iraq, or 500,000, and the 2 million who were displaced? I mean, does anybody realize what was done to that country? We need to remember this.
You understand, and others who are progressive-minded have understood, but unfortunately, the average American has yet to become independent thinking so that they can make intelligent decisions and decide that before Paul Wolfowitz, before any of the people, the talking heads, before Judith Miller and all the rest and Oliver North, why don't we have a bio of their backgrounds? Whether the person, Mr. Morris in the Clinton administration, did I forget something? Wasn't he caught up in a prostitution scandal? What about all the very faithful, moral majority people who are out there espousing moral integrity like Newt Gingrich? How many wives did he betray? I think we should have on one side of the screen, before they tout their go to war and vote for them for president, I think we should have a little background. Thank you very much. We're out of time.